to another edition of the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. I'm your host, Padraig Hilfordy, with, of course, the one and only Lisa O'Reilly. Well, earlier this month, we brought you part one of this special podcast with Irish property tax expert, Mr. Brendan Allen. Well, I'm delighted to say, lock in your ears. Here comes the second edition.
What happens with your income? If you think of your income like a tree, so you've got your central trunk, if you like, and then you've all the different various branches. So you'll have maybe your PAYE income, your rental income, investment income. So it all gets added together, okay? And then the tax rates are applied, okay? So bear in mind, if you are in a married situation and you've got, you both of you have got income, you've got 50 up to 84,000, think of it, is at the lower rate of 20%. So both of you need income. So one of the problems is if you're just going for a single assessment, yes, it is very high. But if both of you are earning, you can get up to 84,000 at the lower rate of 20%, which is reasonable enough. In the previous tax year, it was 80,000. They've adjusted up the bands. Okay, so it's some. Now, of course, the other problem is the PRSI at 4% and the USC, which can get up to 8. But look, it's part of the joy of living in Ireland. Now, the other thing you were talking to me about was somebody buying a property, doing a bit of refurb on it, perhaps, and flipping it. So we've got to ask ourselves, what exactly are they doing, right? If you examine it closely, it's like somebody in a sweet shop. They're buying in something, maybe rewrapping the sweets and selling them on. So effectively, that's what you're doing. So think about it. So you're trading, okay? So you're not in a landlord-tenant situation. You're not in a HMO situation. You're actually trading. So what you're going to be looking at, if you set it up inside an unlimited company, you're going to be looking at 12.5%.
Lovely.
So that could be the way. But also, if you build up a lot of profits in this and the cash is still there, guess what you can do? You can avail of what's called entrepreneurial relief. So you can get the money out, wind up the company, you get the money out at 10%. What's wrong with that?
Is that right?
No. No, this is entrepreneurial relief. So what you must have been working actively in the business for a period of 3 years, you must own more than 5% of the shares, right? And then you get the benefit of up to 1 million at 10%, set as a lifetime value. But you can do this every 6 or 9 years, whatever number of periods you like. But once you get over the million in CGT, so, you will end up paying the higher rate.
So,
am I confusing you?
I'm trying to talk to you, and Lisa's trying to talk to you as well, Brendan. We're getting excited here. I told you, tax can be fun. So, from a point of view, you buy a house, you do it up, you sell it on, you make a profit of about 20, 30 grand. In the company structure, what you can do is take that profit out. I'm not an accountant either, by the way, just in case you're thinking. So you can take out that profit at 10%. Is that what you're saying?
No, not quite. What you need to do is you would need to liquidate the company or sell the company. Okay, so the business has got to cease, or your interest in the business has got to cease, right? So, for example, we could set up Brendan Allen Flipping Limited, okay? Brendan Allen Flipping, number one company, operated, generate a lot of money in there, and sell it in 4 years' time, We get the profits out of that, whatever is there, we get them out at 10%. Then Brendan Allen goes and he says, Brendan Allen, number two flipping company, and we do the same thing for another 4 years, sell the company or close it down, take the money out at 10%. You can do it a number of times. The limit is 1 million. And once the total of those gains over your lifetime get over the 1 million, you pay CGT at the higher rate of 33%. Now, am I still confusing you? Pardon? Am I still confusing you, or does that make a bit of sense?
I'd say there's a bit of overlap with the microphone. So sorry, Brendan. I feel like I'm always talking over you, and we're not getting a clear run at the conversation. So what did you say? Sorry, Brendan.
Right. Am I explaining that well enough, or I maintained a high level of confusion?
No. So the one thing I would say is that you would have to pay. So if you are flipping inside of a company, you need to pay the 12.5% tax on the profits that you're making, and then after that you can do you can liquidate up to 1 million and pay only 100,000 in tax, which is 10% via the entrepreneurial relief.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Now there is another relief, again only available to trading companies. Remember we said flipping, you are in a trading situation, and that's retirement relief. Okay, now you need to be, I think, 55 to get the 55, and once you reach that age, you can get the benefit of that. Now, there, depending on who you're selling to, disposal can be 750,000, okay, is tax-free, no tax at all, okay? You got to be up to 55, you've got to work in full-time for at least 10 years or more. So it's more restrictive than the entrepreneurial relief, okay?
And also, I've just been thinking about that entrepreneurial relief there, Brendan, as you've been talking. And in order to liquidate the company with properties in it, so say I'm running my HMOs via a company and they're making profit, we're paying 12.5% tax on them, that's fine. But when it comes to, say, I don't know, 10 years time, and we decide to liquidate the company, we've got to dispose of the properties first within the company. And does the company have to pay CGT first? And then whatever cash is left, then that's another 10%. So really, is it not a benefit, if you know what I mean? Because it's like 33%.
Okay. 10%. But why would you? The whole idea would be this. You wouldn't necessarily have to sell them, first of all. It's all part of the liquidation. So you would have a liquidator do it. Or alternatively, Brendan Allen flipping number one might be sold to Lisa O'Reilly, who would pay me up to £1 million for the operation. Okay.
All right. Okay.
Now, but you want to make sure, and typically if you're flipping, you wouldn't necessarily have property inside in the company, because the whole concept is you're buying, renovating, selling.
Sorry, I was thinking
with a HMO. Okay. With a HMO, then it's still, what are you doing? You're trading. So this relief should well be available. Now, you might also want to think of, if you just sell your shares, if you do it carefully, have a holding company, you don't need to dispose of all your shares. If you're going for the retirement relief, you could still maintain a certain interest in it, okay? And that could work. I've worked with a few companies. So what we did was, the way we set it up, and don't ask me to go into it today in the podcast, because this costs a lot of money if you want to know the background to it. So what we do is we set up a holding company. We also have the trading company. Now, we can get entrepreneurial relief, and if we're careful, set it up properly with a competent tax advisor, you also get what's called Section 604B. And what that basically means is this. If you're disposing of shares in a trading subsidiary, there is no capital gains tax to pay at all. Now, the money will be upstairs in the holding company. And that's where some of your problems can begin, because while the money is up there, how do you get your hands on it?
Yeah, that's definitely a one where you have to ring Brendan Allen.
I can give you a little tip that I don't normally give out. But what you do is this, or one of the ways, getting your hands on the money. Now, there is a bit of a tax cost, but think about it. What we're going to do, we've got the money, we've avoided a large chunk of capital gains tax by selling shares in a subsidiary company. Okay, so what we're going to do then, our holding company is going to declare a dividend to Brendan Allen. Okay, there's going to be withholding tax on it and all that terrible stuff. But with the funds that we've got out of there, if we invested those in an EIS style company, we'll get tax relief at 40% on the money that we invest in one of those startup style companies.
Okay, that could be risky in itself though, couldn't it?
Well, it certainly could be risky. But again, the likes of Davies and the likes of Grant Thornton and some of the big four companies run. What they do is put accumulated funds together and invest in EIS, and then you can get the tax relief. And they tend to be more secure.
Secure, okay.
Than just looking at individual companies. But look, a lot of them are quite successful and some of them aren't. And life is a risk.
Some of the other questions that come up in the forums that we kind of watch on Facebook and all the groups and that we're in, there's a lot of questions about, say, mammy or daddy has a property, they want to gift it to their child, and that possibly the child already has a house, so they're going to use this house as maybe a rental property, and that there's questions around kind of the whole CGT. So can you kind of just, I know we did a talk about CGT and property there lately. Can you just give us a bit of a synopsis about like CGT and property in general, please?
Yeah, okay. Now, if you're disposing of something during your lifetime, say you've got your family home, fine. You've also got a second home that you're renting, okay? Now, if you, your mum and dad own that, if they give it to young Johnny, okay, or Mary, or both, what happens then is they're disposing of a property. Most likely, if they have it a long time, CGT will apply on the disposal, okay, because they're disposing of an asset. Now, Johnny and Mary are receiving something, okay? So the problem then is they will have CAT applying, which is a gift tax. Now, if it all happens as part of one transaction, there is an offset available. There is an offset available where the CGT paid by mum and dad can be offset against the CAT. So the best tax planning advice for capital gains tax is very simple, die. Because when you die, there is no CGT payable on the disposal of your assets. Okay? Stop laughing. Okay.
The CGT is 20% of the difference between of the, say, the asset value, right? The asset value minus what initially Mammy and Daddy paid for the asset. So say there's a 200,000 gift there. The CGT is going to be, is it 33% is CGT at the moment?
33%. Yeah, 33%, yeah.
But the capital acquisition tax is equally, oh no, the capital acquisition tax is going to be based on the higher value, isn't it? It's not the difference between what it's worth now and what they've paid. It's actually the capital
acquisition tax. That's right. But indeed. But very often I find that one effectively eliminates the other because just the way the calculations work. So it's an individual set of circumstances will decide that. But again, it's a very useful relief. One of the other things that mum and dad often do is they might want to gift a site to a child. Okay. Now, you can do that and no CGT will apply, provided the site is less than 1 acre and that young Johnny or Mary are going to either build a house and live in it, and they must live in it for a number of years, or there could be a clawback on the CGT and CAT thing. So it's worthwhile looking at that. That's the gift of a site to a child. It's a peculiar sort of an exemption, but look, it's there.
And be happy. Would we be right in saying if there was debt on that property, so Mammy and Daddy owned a property for 400 grand and there was debt of, say, 150 grand on it.
Yeah.
If they wanted to dispose of that asset to their Johnny or Mary, then the value of that site or that property now is 250. So, I suppose, in theory, if Mammy and Daddy got debt on that property before they sell it or before they gift it to their children, well, then they've just reduced the value of that gift. However, I don't know how the banks would allow the debt to be passed from Mummy and Daddy down to little Johnny. That's the only thing I don't know, if the banks would allow that debt to be reassigned from one person down to another person.
Now, I know we've been on the podcast for a little while, but you've managed to stump me now with that question. So thank you, Lisa.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but I would imagine if you're gifting something to somebody, you've got to give them the encumbrance-free value. So it may well go to market, and it wouldn't necessarily be the mortgage may not be taken into account for don't be asking me difficult questions, for God's sake. I would need to look at, to be honest with you, but I think it would be market value rather than the value with the net value after the mortgage. However, if it was coming by way of an inheritance, okay, it would be the net value.
Yeah, so if you are getting on in the years and the banks will loan you money, isn't it good to take as much loan out, if you've got a lot of property to kind of give on to, say, Johnny and Mary? Yeah. Wouldn't it be a worthwhile exercise to go to the banks and look for as much debt as you can?
Yes, indeed. Always thinking, Lisa, always thinking. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, you can come to me some advice if anybody wants some of that advice in the grey area.
she's a very good student, Brendan. You know, she's been really looking forward to this podcast. There's some unpacking on this, Brendan, because I think as you say, we're almost 45 minutes into it, and we probably haven't scratched the surface. But just reflecting on some of the aspects you spoke about, really making sense in the fact and stepping back and taking a look at where you want to go as an investor, or you know what you want to achieve, is probably probably a big nugget from the point of view of people starting out. For the people that's more established, Brendan, they're getting a wee bit more pushed on tax, those different aspects. How often do you see people in situations, every day, every other day, or is it just with the lack of tax planning has got people into serious amount of difficulties? But if they had this advice beforehand, it would have definitely solved a lot of their issues moving forward. How important is that?
Right. Well, to me, it's as I mentioned earlier, it's like that chair. You know, you've got your mortgage, your property, your tax, your personal life. And if any of those are out of balance, you're going to get into trouble. Look, tax is a fundamental part of life. So, you know, we've got the principles. You live, you die, you got taxes. And they're the real things that always are going to be in your life, no matter who you are. Now, my experience with the tax man is this. Compliance is a lot cheaper than non-compliance. Because when you fall the wrong side of the tax man, the penalties can be very, very severe. Every quarter, if you take the time, the revenue publish defaulters lists. And by the way, landlords feature very prominently on that for failure to keep proper records. And you might, for example, end up owing 20,000 in tax, but the penalties could be two or three times that. So you need to be compliant. Don't mess around. This is your future. Do it properly. So much cheaper in the long run. Now, to answer your question, yeah, get yourself set up properly. I think we've hit on, at the beginning of the podcast, say, have a number of properties in your own name. When you're comfortable with the income running off of those future ones, let's look at using a company structure and try and get that balance. How much money do you need to live on? And then start building your wealth and doing this pension trick that we mentioned earlier on in the podcast. So it's worthwhile taking your time and planning what you want to do. I mean, it's like writing a book. Very successful authors, what they do is they start at the last page. So what are you going to do in your life? Where do you want to be when you're sitting on that rocking chair, right? Looking out at the world with hopefully your glass of wine. I wish I should have, you know. So if you plan early, you can have a very successful time in your rocking chair looking out at the world. So get the tax element of it right. Don't overborrow. You know, I see guys who are totally undercapitalized. One of the worst things, there was a number of years ago, a particular English operators used to come over and teach people how to invest in property. And they'd say, oh, go out and max out your credit card and use that to put down a deposit. For God's sake, that is not the right way. Get a good loan advisor. Dillis Guy CS are one of the leaders, Finance Ireland. Lisa would know more about these than I do. I just concentrate on the tax side of things. But get your borrowings right, because if you overborrow, or if you go interest only, which is wonderful, but when the capital kicks in, and look, guys, hands up, I made that mistake, and it really hurt. You know, where you're going along paying 1,500, and then suddenly, you know, it's 5,500, and you're saying, Christ, and you can't sustain that. So to sell a property, but anyway, yeah. Those days are in the past. So, but again, thankfully,
now, I agree
it's just watch the tax.
I agree with you in relation to be careful with debt, what kind of debt you get. And I think, though, so in Ireland, there's only really two lenders that are really lending on buy-to-lets, which is ICS, Dealers, yeah, and Finance Ireland, and they're pretty high. So I think they're 7.25 and 7.45%. And I think that back when, like a couple of years ago, I think that the personal loan interest rate was around like the 7-8%, and then the likes of Dinusk and Finance Island, they're around the 4%. So that did make sense. But now the personal interest rates that you can get from some of the banks is more or less the same now as what ICS and Finance Island are. So I think that it's not necessarily, rule out, credit card funding or personal finance funding. I think you just need to understand interest rates. And I think that if you can get a personal loan for 7.2%, and you can also get a mortgage for 7.2%, well, remember, the mortgage, they're going to look for security. So they're going to look for a first charge on the property. But if you don't need to get a mortgage and go down that whole route of needing to do that, it can actually be an expensive form of finance. So if you can actually fund a property using personal finance and it's only 7.2%, well, you know,
go for it,
So I suppose it's different ways of looking at it, and I suppose different times as well.
Okay. Can I introduce one thing, before we get near wrapping up? There's one thing I want to mention, and it always astonishes me. A lot of people have heard about this thing called an SPV. And just for the avoidance of any doubt, it's not a disease, okay? What an SPV is a limited company. It's a special purpose vehicle, okay? And all that means is that it's the company you're using for your rental income, okay? So it is one thing that I see generally coming up. And perhaps you guys might be able to advise me. I've heard people talk about lenders looking for, if you're lending into a company, that it must be a DAC style company. That's a designated activity company. No, you haven't come across that?
No.
No. Okay. So I think we talked about that before, Brendan. And so a DAC is a company, an SPV is a company, and a DAC is a company. A DAC is a company where it only allows you to trade as a certain thing. So, like as you said before to me, Brendan, a bank would be a DAC, i.e., they can only provide banking services, or provide rental services, whereas an SPV, you can do multiple trades in an SPV. There's no limitations on it. So I think ICS are probably one of the only kind of banks, more mainstream bank, I suppose, that would loan to a company in Ireland, and they require an SPV. They don't require a DAC. From my personal experience, they require an SPV and not a DAC. So yeah, I think that should clear that up anyway. But that's my personal experience. Maybe someone else, they might say it can only be property and that's it. But that they just want an SPV.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to really listen back to this again. There's some value there, Brendan and Lisa, tonight from a tax.
Can I give you one other small little thing that has recently come up for me? Is this gentleman had a property, he had a large back garden, okay? So he was approached by a local developer and say, hey, will you sell me this large back garden? I'm going to build a house on it. Okay, so that was the issue. So after the deal was done, he got quite a shock. Because the land was sold for development purposes, it was higher than the market value of that back garden, and he had to pay CGT on that difference. Am I explaining that properly?
Yeah.
On the difference between the development value, which is the new market value, because all of a sudden someone is very, very desirable. Minus the market value.
Exactly. And that comes as quite a fright. And a lot of people do that, and they are unaware of the consequences of it. And this poor gentleman was very distressed when he found out what was going on to him. So that's there you go.
One, yeah.
It does cause a lot of difficulty.
Don't sell the back garden.
Well, sell it if you're getting a good price, but don't ignore the taxes, And just finally, if you do get yourself into trouble with the tax man, apply for what's called a phase payment. So you can get up to 2 years to repay whatever debts you can that you've incurred. Sometimes they'll go a bit more, but from the revenue's point of view, they don't see themselves as a bank. Okay, they're not lenders to the taxpayers of Ireland. So they want you to borrow from your own personal resources or from a bank or somewhere else to discharge your debts, you know.
Hopefully we won't marry tax liability, but if we do, Brendan, I think the moral of the story is to find you and come to you.
Perhaps. No, there are lots of excellent tax consultants, but for God's sake, guys, if you are doing anything, talk to your accountant. It just makes so much more sense, because if most accountants, if they don't know what they're talking about or unsure about a particular area, they refer the case on to somebody else.
Brendan, that has been so helpful, and I think we'll wrap up there now. I didn't take any notes down. I've got it all stored in the memory, and as soon as I get off this podcast, I'm going to be taking them all down, and I'm going to be giving you a phone call. We're going to be meeting up at some stage anyway. So you can expect a phone call off me, Brendan. And for me, it's been super helpful, hopefully all of our listeners will really enjoy listening to it too. Porrick.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a tree drawn here on my notepad. I've been taking loads of notes on that. And as I say, Lisa had done her research. She knew exactly some of the questions that our listeners would really like the answer to. And I think it was phenomenal. First of all, I suppose we are very from a business point of view, entrepreneurs are very much, let's run down the road instead of walking. Sometimes maybe pulling up that handbrake, having a look and see. And that's what we really have to take note. Investment, it's serious. It can go wrong. Tax planning, you know, again, if you don't do it, good luck with it. You just have to be a little bit more astute in what you're trying to achieve and what you're trying to do. And as I say, I took a lot out of the balance aspect, and I suppose that is definitely something that a lot of people and our listeners will as well. But look, that is everything from tonight's property podcast, Salt Foundations. I'd like to thank Brendan Allen, our tax expert, and the lovely Lisa, and a big happy birthday to Lisa as well. We'll not say too much more, Lisa.
That was last week, and we'd like to forget about that, please. Thank you for that,
Warwick. Thanks for listening.
Okay. All right, guys. Listen, thank you for allowing me join your podcast. I've really enjoyed it, and I love the hard questions as well. So thank you very much indeed.
Well, that's all we got time for on this special two-part series of Solid Foundations. A massive thank you to our special guest, Mr. Brendan Allen. And you can follow Brendan on all his social channels just in the show notes below. And don't forget, you can also follow Porrick and Lisa as well. And check out our Solid Foundations Facebook page as well. Do give it a follow. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. We will be back next month with another amazing guest. And we're really looking forward and excited to bring you this one.